Welcome to the Indian Silicon Valley podcast. I'm your host, Jivraj, and on this podcast, I speak with founders, investors, and domain experts from the Indian Valley, trying to understand the art of building a legendary company. In this episode, I speak with Bala Sarda, founder and CEO of Vadham India. Vadham is one of India's first consumer brands to go global from day one and establish an incredible presence across international markets. Almost 90% of Vadham's revenues continue to come from global geographies with heavy presence in the US and Europe. With this global presence as the central theme for the episode, I chat with Bala and understand more about this journey. His early influences of seeing businesses within the family and then starting out very early as a student provide a glimpse into what the early founder spark really looks like. Through the episode, we discuss what it means to build an international supply chain and expand geographically while building trust and confidence with foreign customers. The story of Vadham is a playbook for any aspiring founder looking to someday establish a brand from India for the world. This conversation has been pending for long, and I'm really glad that we could finally get it in. To all consumer brand lovers, you will thoroughly enjoy this one. But before we get started, here is a quick word on our sponsor for the episode. This episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast is presented by Stride Ventures, which is one of India's leading venture debt funds, becoming synonymous with innovative startup financing in India. Stride Ventures provides comprehensive solutions going beyond venture debt to cater to distinctive challenges faced by high growth and inherently strong businesses backed by leading institutions. The fund has a portfolio of over 60 plus diversified companies, having deployed more than 1,500 crore rupees to date. In just over 2 years, Stride Ventures has emerged as the preferred venture debt lender in the Indian ecosystem. To know more about this phenomenal fund, visit strideventures.in. That is spelled as STRIDEVENTURES.IN. And with that, let's dive in to the 133rd episode of the Indian Silicon Valley podcast with Bala of Vadham. Thank you so much, Bala, for joining me. Incredibly delighted to be hosting you today.
My pleasure, Jivraj. My pleasure to be here.
Glad to hear that, Bala. And I think this conversation personifies the essence of the podcast, which is the belief in India's innovation system. We've had, you know, the Infosys, Zoho, Freshworks story, which have proven that, you know, India on a services level, product level can dominate the world. But companies like Vadham, Wow are now proving that we can build consumer brands sitting out of India for the world as well. And I think that really fascinates me. I want to uncover much of that, but I'd love to start off with your personal journey because you started Vadham at a very early age, if I'm not wrong, which is relatively 23. And you've been always fascinated by entrepreneurship, as you've mentioned, with a couple of failed projects before this. So maybe if you can just, you know, give us more context to what were your early influences like with business, with entrepreneurship, with projects that were pre-Vadham, and maybe that gives us good context.
No, absolutely, Jivraj. I think firstly, thanks for that amazing introduction. I think I think Infosys and some of these companies you named, I think we don't even fall in the same city. But yeah, I think on a very, very small scale, you know, we are at some level trying to take India to the world, right? So yeah, but I think to your question on my personal journey with entrepreneurship more so, I think it's been fairly interesting, right? I think it's been very, very unconventional, you know. I think a lot of the founders you see are very pedigreed and, you know, come from a very, very strong background and academic background. But me personally, I think I had the entrepreneurial bug very, very early in my journey, right? So right since the age of 10, you know, I was trying to publish a couple of books, to, you know, doing a bunch of things in my teens, and to then obviously finally starting my, you know, a couple of my student startups in my undergrad, right? One obviously was a digital marketing company, one was a youth marketing company. So I think to be fair, you know, this is something I always wanted to do, and entrepreneurship is something, and creating something of my own and creating value, I think is something always which was very close to my heart. And then, you know, what way I would do it was obviously not very clear, because This was very early on, and I was exploring a bunch of things. Of course, I used to look up to a lot of these American success stories and take a lot of inspiration, from a lot of these founders who had built amazing businesses very, very young, and used to read a lot of books around this. But I think it's only, like I said, right, in my undergrad did I start, running my first startup. Of course, it taught me a lot. Did my undergrad. And after that, of course, I was very, very sure that I didn't want to go for an MBA. I didn't sit for placements. And I knew that, I think for me personally, I think it makes sense to just jump in and, start something and, then figure it out. Right. So I think it's only after my undergrad, when I was actually looking to find that real scalable idea. Right. I think till my undergrad was still a lot of these were part-time startups, even though they taught me a lot. But it's only after that did I realize that I need to now find something which is scalable, real. Something I can do for the next, I don't know, decade or so, if not more. And and while I was, of course, looking at multiple industries, I'll be honest there, one of them ended up being tea. To give you a little bit of background, I personally come with a lineage of over 85 to 90 years, in the industry. That said, my family has been into tea for the last four generations, but honestly speaking, it felt extremely boring and commoditized and non-sexy from the outside. So I had no plans to get into tea. But like I said, when I was looking at a lot of these categories and, consumer brands was obviously something which excited me. I understood digital marketing. I loved brands. I loved reading about brands. Phil Knight's Shoe Dog is still my favorite book in, how he's built something with Nike. So I think that's something which fascinated me very, very early as well. So I knew that probably CPG and, brand building is something I could do. And this is a time when, Paperboat had just raised some money, probably the first consumer brand, at least I knew, had raised some venture capital. And I realized, hey, this is also possible in a category like CPG. Then there was, of course, ID Fresh and, a couple of these companies that done, which gave me confidence that, there is probably an opportunity to build something large here. Starting looking at multiple categories, looked at apparel, electronics, I don't know, everything. And while I was actually doing this, I ended up going to Darjeeling. My dad's born and brought up in Darjeeling and, we have a small house there and it's beautiful. So I just ended up being there for 2-3 months, thinking of something, valuable I could create, and a lot of ideas going through my head. And, as you may imagine, while I was looking at everything else, because I was sitting amongst these beautiful tea estates, drinking the most amazing tea in the world, that it hit me that if you look at categories like tea, India is one of the largest producers and exporters of tea, right? It's a multi-billion dollar category globally. And I realized that all of our products were actually getting exported at single digit margins. So we had some amazing tea estates, farmers who would grow the most amazing teas, which I was tasting. But after that, it was getting exported to some foreign brand, thousands of miles away, who would, then brand it, package it, and sell it to consumers with multiple X margins and a lot of these things happening globally, right? And while this was happening, the entire industry back home actually was struggling, right? I realized that even in 2012, everybody was wanting to just get out of the business, shut their tea estate, not grow tea, because, labor costs were going up, their yield had not gone up, the amount of money they were getting per kilogram had not gone up, had not even reached inflation levels. And everybody was struggling, right? And fundamentally, I realized that one of the biggest reason was that there was no value addition happening at source. That's number one. Number two, when I started speaking to consumers, even if I did the math in my head, I actually realized that a lot of this was not making sense, right? We all have higher trust with origin products, right? We want to buy wine from France and, Switzerland se chocolate chahiye, Kashmir se apples chahiye, right? But for some reason, a lot of these foreign brands were selling Indian tea and Indian chai and Darjeeling and all of these products from India, which just made no sense, right? And I said that there is definitely an opportunity to build a very, very differentiated brand positioning. From a product perspective, like I said, right, even the supply chain was very, very messed up. So right from a farmer in India to a consumer in the US, in any part of the world consuming Indian teas, There were multiple middlemen, right? And by the time consumers were getting the product, it was exchanging so many hands that the cost was going up, the quality was going down, which again did not make sense, right? And I said, why can't we just cut out all of these people, source direct and distribute it direct and, sort of build, make available a much higher quality, fresher product to consumers. And of course, in a very, very differentiated, high trust brand story, which can also impact and empower the value chain, which in fact are millions of farmers here in India. And it just started to, fall into place. I think one of the biggest challenges, right, I remember thinking about this, and obviously, when you, as a 20 year old, thinking about something like this, the only thing which came to my head was that I'm probably doing something wrong, right? Why are people not doing it, right? It can't be that simple. And that's when I realized actually that there were two challenges which were there. One, of course, India, unfortunately, has been poor at building brands. I think we've got the meat, we've got everything in us, but we are not great at branding ourselves. If you look at the category as well, right, we make the best teas, but we just don't know how to present that to a consumer. That's number one. And number two, of course, building a global brand. I think this is a word which is used. I also use it embarrassingly because, a global brand is a global brand. It comes with a lot of weight. And that comes, it's not easy, right? It comes with a lot of effort. These are markets which are much more expensive to operate than India. It entails thousands and millions of dollars of investments to actually go and do something in some of these markets. So my second question was, how will we distribute, right? Even if we can make a great product available, crack the brand story, how do we distribute? And that's where the internet came in. From day one, I realized that the internet is not democratizing consumer brand building. Of course it is, but it is also democratizing global consumer brand building because, if you really look at we have done or what Avaao is doing, and now so many amazing entrepreneurs from India are doing, that they are building global brands sitting out of India because of the internet. And the internet gives them that ticket to enter the market, test the product, and then scale, and then of course ultimately go omni-channel. And by then, of course, there's more confidence, there's ability to invest more. And the internet was, of course, really coming up. So I genuinely believe that this is probably an incredible time to do something in this space. And that just led me to start Vadam India in 2015.
Awesome. That's lovely to hear because I think it clarifies so much of that early fundamental understanding of building a company. I think you've clarified much of it. Very fascinatingly, I'd love to know what was the learning curve for you personally like, right? Because I understand that, you had a thesis in mind, the idea was there, but I'm guessing going to a market which was like super uncharted territory, you didn't have like a playbook to fall back on, was something which was, haunting, if at all, right? So maybe what was it like to just figure out logistics, things which, are not the shiny aspects of the business, but yet have to be done super well? What was that like?
No, absolutely. I think, Jivraj, honestly, everything has been a learning in the journey. To be honest, I had never been a part of the corporate world. All the jargons I will speak in this interview, you will talk about, and we keep reading about across, right from, our channels of distribution, how do we do marketing and how do you do, what is a TAM, what is market mapping and, what is finance and, what's an ox chart and, how do you sort of build businesses? What is venture funding for that matter? To be very, very honest, like I said, I think my journey has been very, very different that way. I think I have learned everything while building this company. It feels incredible looking back. Now, of course, I understand a lot of these nuances. And of course, I get the opportunity to work with incredible investors, incredible people in my team from whom I learn a lot. But I think in the early days, Jivraj, honestly, I was just following my heart and my understanding, which I just told you, where a lot of it was driven by common sense, right? In fact, the first 2-3 years of me building the business, right, from product, to sort of distributing this product, taking feedback from customers and iterating, and everything we did was honestly something which came very, very naturally. And common sense told me that if you have to make something and sell it to consumers, this is really the process. Of course, a lot of that fell into place when I realized that, okay, this is how even the bigger companies and, you know, the more structured companies do it. And of course, things I could improve. Of course, that's one of the reasons we raised venture capital, to get mentorship and to understand, you know, how can we, of course, I took it from 0 to 1, but how do we take it from 1 to 100, 100 to whatever, 500 and so on and so forth. Of course, that comes with a lot of, you know, you don't need to reinvent the flywheel around learnings there, right? And that's really one of the reasons I also raised money. But I think, Jivraj, tremendous learnings across, you know, across the board. I think the first thing I wanted to obviously figure out was the product. And there, like I said, right, I think everything we did then, all the innovation we did in our product packaging, honestly, was driven by common sense, right? To give you a small example, you know, Lipton, which is one of the largest brands in the world, in the tea category, I mean, they're one of their oldest ad campaigns is Garden Fresh Tea to the World, right? Any layman would understand, any consumer understands this, that better tea is tea which is more fresh. So my key goal was, how do I ensure that my product is fresh, right? And for that, whatever we could do from a manufacturing perspective, you know, I ended up doing, right, which is researching, mapping the market, talking to vendors, talking to suppliers, which told us that, hey, if you can actually vacuum pack the products, it will ensure that the products are much more fresher. You source it direct. You know, the way it is transported from the tea gardens to a factory in India, it's horrible. You need to change that, because you can actually ensure that the product, you know, you'll ensure that the product is much more cleaner, safer, if you sort of take care of that. If you store the product in a certain way, it will increase the longevity of that freshness, so on and so forth. And all of those things I tested out like a layman, you know, like a consumer, representing the consumer as an entrepreneur internally, took those steps, and then took direct feedback from consumers, which of course, you know, was very, 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 very positive, which kept on telling me that, Bala, I think you're doing the right thing. So that's really the early journey. I can go deeper and talk about more, but like I said, right, fundamentally, a lot of it is self-learning and talking to the consumer and listening to the consumer, which really, even, you know, even today, whatever stage a brand might be in this space, has to. So,
absolutely. I think those are, again, very crucial pointers. In fact, goes to the fact that I was, you know, in my research, I came across this video on Vadham where Discovery had covered the entire process. It's a 20-25 odd minute video where you actually show how the manufacturing supply chain, the vacuum aspect that you spoke about, it's actually shown. And that really, like, blew my mind, because as a consumer, we only see that tea pack and, you know, the tea bag that we eventually consume, but there's so much that goes behind it. That brings me to the point that this is a different segue, but one of the things that I've seen team mention a lot at Vadham, or the leadership, is the new product development aspect of it, right? In F&B, I'm guessing that while there is high experimentation, you can't really play along with taste as much, right? So you have to be precise, careful, responsible, because there's a lot of consumer trust. Since a lot of people, you know, hearing you are potential future builders of brands, what do you suggest when it comes to experimentation, new product development, launches, right? If you can maybe share your thoughts there, I think that'll be super helpful, Bala.
Correct. Absolutely. Jivraj, I think before I take that question on your last point about our manufacturing, right, I think one thing I forgot to add was also that when we were building this, right, how do you look at a long-term moat, you know, for the business and, you know, make the business more defensible? And like you said, right, I think very early on, one thing I had identified that, you know, if we have to build something for the long term, we need to ensure that we manufacture everything, you know, we make, right? One, of course, we didn't find people who could do this for us. So I said, if there's nobody who can do it for us, then, you know, if we have to solve this problem, I need to do it myself. And as a team, we need to do it ourselves. Like I said, right, even today, everything we sell at Vadham is actually manufactured by us. And even going forward, I think that's really the ambition, to ensure to keep maximum size of our portfolio to be manufactured internally, because that is one, of course, it ensures we can control the entire experience for the consumer without any compromise. And at the second point is, how do you then, you know, build something which is also very, very defensible, hopefully over the next few years, right? So that's just one thing I wanted to add. I think on your point about NPD, in a young brand like ours, I think, Jivraj, very, very important. I think that's really the core competitive advantage we actually have in front of a lot of these bigger legacy players, right? Because you can't take the product they are selling and, you know, and try to compete in their arena, right? It's just impossible. You will fail miserably. Right, they are much better distributed. Their brand awareness is off the charts. They understand this better. Their teams are smarter. They've done it for, I don't know, several decades. So I think as a company, how do you bring innovation, which is launching innovative products, doing NPD, like you said, I think is a critical part of our story. And I think it needs to be a critical part of our story even going forward. And if you want to, or rather any brand, you know, in this space has to be relevant. The best part about being a digital first brand, Jeevraj, is that the cost of NPD or cost of experimentation is much lower. And that's really a big advantage, right? And that's the one thing we work on, that, you know, be fast, be agile with your, with your experimentations. Of course, don't take shortcuts. Do not take shortcuts around research, market mapping, consumers listening. Of course, you can't take shortcuts there because then you have ought to fail. But at the same time, we also bring a balance between, you know, a deep research and agility so that you can take some of these punts, some of these bets on a smaller scale, identify your failures, shut them off, identify your winners and just scale them up, right? And that's really what, you know, the DNA has been. Even in a category like tea, right, we have done a bunch of innovation around the kind of ingredients we use, right? The kind of products we have launched, the kind of flavors we have presented to our consumers, the kind of packaging formats we have followed, like I mentioned, right? And you know, while you see a lot of these, you know, at scale today, I mean, I can tell you there are so many in the graveyard, which nobody knows about, right? Which we have tried, tested, failed miserably. But I think with every time we have done it, I think we've become much more smarter as a team and much more informed of, you know, how do we minimize our failures going forward, right? So I think incredible experience doing it. And I think, you know, we hope to continue to do that across categories, you know, as we build this brand further.
Phenomenal. That's awesome to hear. Can we go a bit more tactical into this maybe, right? Can you like maybe break down the steps? Is it like insight collection, then maybe launch, experimentation? What constitutes as a win for you when launching, right? Maybe if you can just spend a minute or two on this structure, I think that'll be very helpful.
No, absolutely. I'll break it down in a very simple way. I think for a lot of entrepreneurs who are watching this, hopefully, I think there are 2-3 ways we sort of understand what we need to do. One, of course, is market mapping. There are several reports available, of course, which tells you what's the category size of a certain ingredient product. The second step is to go on platforms like marketplaces, Amazon, Walmart. There's so many tools which tells you, you know, what is actually selling there. There are so many tools some of these, you know, marketplaces offer to you, which actually tell you what people are searching for, what volumes are some of these products getting. And, you know, basis that, you get some understanding of where the gap in the market is. And the third part is, which is more qualitative, is around, you know, mapping customer research, customer data, right? I think we, for example, internally, and I think one of the easiest ways, of course, there are several ways you can do it, but today one of the easiest ways is to go and, you know, scrape through the thousands and thousands of reviews you find on the internet for a lot of your competitor products, for a lot of your categories, right? And one of the hacks, you know, we look at is, you know, you go and scrap and look at data and look at the things people are not liking in the category and reverse that and fix that and, you know, make that as your key differentiator when you launch a product, right? I think that's a very, very simple, fast and effective way to launch something, which we of course follow. And when you launch, I think for us, when we launch something, we're very sure, right? Of course, do it with minimal quantities. It's possible today, right? Start with a very small channel. You don't start with multiple channels when you do something like this. Start with one channel, minimal quantities. And there are 3-4 metrics you need to track, right? Which gives you a sense of the fact that if the product is a success or not, right? One, of course, most importantly, the customer feedback, right? Of course, there's a lot of ways to quantify that as well, right? What's your average rating? And, you know, we do a bunch of surveys, right? So we ask a bunch of questions to our customers across different, you know, pieces, right? Be it the price point, be it the taste, be it the flavor, be it the packaging, be it, you know, what do they think about it in terms of their consumption patterns? And, you know, is it something they will buy again or is it something they will buy once and so on and so forth? And Jeevraj, I think the second piece to this is, you know, tracking some key metrics, which is, first of all, you know, what kind of feedback your customers are giving you for that product. I think it's today with the internet, you get direct feedback We send a bunch of surveys to our customers, asking them questions on what they think about the price, the product, the packaging, several factors around the product we've launched. Of course, there are several ways to quantify this as well. You know, what's your average rating? You can have minimum benchmarks around launching a product and the minimal rating you need to achieve before you scale up something. So we'll follow that. And I think, of course, the ultimate litmus test for the success of any product is repeat rate, right? So how many people are actually coming back from that original cohort who bought this product? How many people are coming back and buying it again? So while this is a very, very broad framework, but I mean, you know, you can do 80% of your tests with this. And, you know, for some of the more nuanced launches, you need to just go deeper and, you know, just try and find more signals, which tells you that the product is working or not working at that price point and in that market and so on and so forth.
Got it. No, that's awesome to hear. I think I love how granular you've gone. And I think this can be, you know, almost like a mini masterclass on how to like launch your products. I think that's super helpful. Going forward, I'd love to know that Vadham has this feel of the brand, which really comes out from a distance. You can identify the pack, you know, it's very willful. It shows in the design sense, everything. I'm sure this has always been a work in progress. But what I'd love to know is when you're early on, you need to make these trade-offs, right? You either get product right, you either get like a design sense right, storytelling right, marketing right, whatnot, right? Ideally, you want everything to be the same. But I would love to understand how this journey of getting the brand right has been. Where did it evolve from? Were you always very, you know, let's say particular about what the brand says, etc.? Like, how did that kind of follow would be interesting to know.
No, absolutely. I think, Jivraj, first and foremost, I think one of the things I'd identify that if you have to build a brand, especially in the mass premium space we are in, I think, you know, you need to present yourself fantastically, right? I think it needs to stand out and stand out in the global arena, right? So your aesthetics, your design, your storytelling, everything, you know, which a consumer interacts with has to be extremely good, consistent, and you know, be at it, right? I mean, honestly, to be very honest, we are still at it, right? We're still trying to get better with that every day. But I think there are 2-3 things, right, which we have honestly followed, Jivraj. One, being authentic. I think authenticity is rewarded big time in some of these markets, and including India for that matter, right? I think a lot of entrepreneurs try to glamorize, their product, which is great. I think you need to do that. Like I said, we need to present ourselves more confidently. But sometimes, you know, we all have such amazing, authentic stories. And because of the fact that some of these bigger companies have glamorized everything so much, right? From your shampoo to your oil to your tea to, you know, to drinks giving you wings and all of that. Sometimes, you know, consumers, you know, the way to actually differentiate yourselves amongst this clutter is to actually have a very, very, very authentic story. So if you look at any pack of Vadham, you know, there's a small message, you know, you will find, which is honestly my first pitch. Even if you open my early emails, that was my first pitch to the first set of bloggers I would have sent the samples to, right? This is when Vadham was a 3-member team, right? That, hey, this is why I started this company. This is my background. If we become big, this is how we can help our community. And trust me when I say that this is probably one of the better teas you'll consume, right? Because it's way more fresh and you've taken care of it. And the kind of customer love that brings you is just incredible, right? So I think for Vadham, our storytelling has been very, very authentic, number one. And number two, of course, I think, like I said, right, I think ensuring that, you have a design story which is modern yet Indian, again, ensuring it is authentic from a design perspective as well. I think traditionally, one thing we had seen, which I didn't want to do was, you know, India is always known to do these traditional designs, right? And you will find an elephant and some hell illustration on a design. And not that we don't do it. We have some gift assortments and stuff where we do it. But one of the things that was absolutely clear is that, you know, we are building a brand for the mainstream consumers, right? And we're building an extremely modern brand relevant to that 30-year-old, in America, in Europe, who's born and brought up there. And for that, we need to, of course, bring a piece of India, but at the same time, make it relevant for that customer, right? So these are broadly two, guiding principles amongst, of course, a lot of other smaller nuances which we personally take care of. And to answer your question, 100%, I am, of course, involved in this aspect of the brand still. Of course, we have a phenomenal team who takes care of this and executes it. But given this is something so crucial to what we are doing, I try and spend a little bit of time and ensure that, you know, we're at least consistent in, you know, what we are doing going forward as well.
Got it. Fair enough. I think that makes complete sense. And again, I love how tactical this is, right? So I think it gives a very clear directional viewpoint to how to go ahead and build a brand, build a story, what to focus on. Maybe zooming out a bit and looking at, you know, macro or maybe like the challenges that a scale company has to face. Because as you know, in India, we're now seeing a surge of a lot of consumer brands being born. But the question now is starting to pop up, which is to say that, you know, what really scales a company and how do the Hindustan Unilevers of the new age world get born? As a company which is now doing, you know, multi 3-digit crores in revenue, what are the immediate challenges that a company of your scale has to face? I would love to know what this phase of the journey really means for you.
No, Jirad, I think that's a very, very important question. And honestly, something, we've all been addressing and, you know, understanding what is that we need to take the brand to the next level from where we are and, you know, so on and so forth. But I think several aspects to it, I'll talk about a couple of them, right? I think one, which is a non-negotiable for us and something we ensure to sort of do and aspire to do at all levels of scale, is how do you ensure that your product is as consistent from a quality perspective? And that is a challenge which comes with scale, right? While there are a lot of benefits, a lot of economies of scale you get from a cost perspective, from a sourcing perspective, but how do you ensure that fundamentally and culturally in an organization where, there are several hundred people operating, you know, is really the number one thing, we have been trying to sort of overcome and, you know, work it out in a way that, you know, if not, not only today, but even 5 years, 10 years down the line, there's an SOP we can create, which can, you know, ensure that our product is as good and consistent across the board. Of course, team building is a critical part of growing an organization at this scale. How do you build a good team? How do you build a team which can scale? How do you build a great culture? How do you ensure that, and you know, like I said, right, we manufacture everything we make, right? So from a manufacturing perspective, how do you scale that up, right? And keep it consistent is, of course, also very, very critical. Of course, we've been fortunate to have some amazing people, and we have a very unique setup, you know, unique mix of people who have gray hair and a lot of experience, and they bring that to the table, bring a lot of stability, hopefully, to everything we do today and going forward. And of course, you know, a lot of hot, young, dynamic blood who just not take no for an answer and get things done and, you know, ensure that the brand is as agile as it was before, right? But I think definitely, with scale, the way you approach problems, the way you approach product, supply chain, marketing, your team, I think it's critical for every entrepreneur to change that in every way possible and evolve. Because honestly, more than anything, I think, how do you sort of evolve as a team and evolve your processes around all of these different functions in the business is really what defines your success going forward. And that's really what we have been trying to do at Fathom. We're, of course, getting into more geographies, getting into more categories, parallelly trying to get into more channels of distribution. And I think for that, a lot of this is very, very important.
Absolutely. I can only imagine. And it's refreshing to know that there's a different set of challenges at each stage of the business. And it's not, of course, like sometimes it can seem like it's been a rosy ride, right? It's all been all gloomy, but that's not the case. It's been bumpy along the way, but of course there have been a lot of wins. But you know, it's interesting you mentioned that, because I'd love to know that as an evolving brand, what is your role as the CEO kind of become, right? Because one of the questions that I often ask on the podcast is, how do founders manage short-term execution and long-term thinking, right? Because that becomes very challenging, at least from afar and outside, to notice. Any tips, trades there as to what your role transforms to become at this part of the organization?
I'm still trying to figure it out, Jivraj, every day. So I think you'll be the first person to know when I have absolute clarity, on what I need to do now. No, I think on a serious note, I think my style of working, and I think that's what I've seen with founder friends, with companies in a similar space of time and, you know, a scale, are is that, one, of course, how do you think strategic and think long-term? Of course, that's something extremely critical, right? I think my biggest role in the organization today, I realize, is to bring clarity in what are we doing, what do we stand for, you know, and what will take us to 5x, 10x, or what we are doing today, right? And bringing absolute clarity, over-communicating that to my team. I think really that's what I've been trying to do. And for us, that's very straightforward. I mean, the idea is we started with teas, but our real vision is, you know, to take the best of native Indian wellness wisdom to the world, right? Be it teas and, you know, spices and herbs, and there's so many products India has to offer, right? And all of them have amazing wellness connotations, but no Indian brand has been able to take that at scale and in global markets, right? And that's really what we're trying to do. We started with teas, and now we're also foraying into spices later this year. So just building that vision and bringing clarity to that vision is of course critical. And at the same time, I think, Jivraj, my style of work and at least my approach to work is, at, in every organization, right, there are some things which are working well for you, and there are some things which need more attention, right? So for me to prioritize that, you know, that, hey, this is something I need to get my hands dirty and work with the team very, very closely and fix till it comes to a point of time where I'm confident that it can run on its own. I need to sort of go and do that even today. And while, of course, you know, there are a lot of things where, you know, we have a team which has overtaken a lot of the stuff we are doing, and it's in better hands, much more capable hands, and they're doing a seamless job, where I obviously take a step back. Honestly, the way I focus, you know, one day there is, you know, if you're fundraising, then, you know, obviously my number one goal as the CEO of the company is to ensure that, you know, we're doing that in the right way, right? So I think in different times of the year and different stages of what we are doing at different quarters, I think, you know, there is some new priority. So identifying that and ensuring that I am giving it enough time, not more or less, because both can create issues, I think is really what I've been trying to figure out as somebody leading this at this stage.
Got it. No, that's very interesting to hear and very, very fresh, because, you know, gives us the perspective of what is a founder and CEO at this stage kind of think. A lot of it talks about judgment, I think, just like, you know, prioritization is a lot about judgment.
It's all about prioritization. I agree. It's all about prioritization.
Yeah, super to know that, Bala. Thanks for sharing. The other thing that we've not discussed here is, you know, the team aspect, and you mentioned this a bunch of times. It might be helpful for the audience to understand how have you gone about building a team for a category which is maybe not as, again, proven, right? I understand why the rage might be right now to join a new age brand which is succeeding, but what was it like initially, and what has it been like now to maybe hire team leaders, right, who can actually scale this to, you know, as you said, the 500 journey, whatnot. So maybe if you can talk about these two aspects, what was it like hiring in the early journey, and what do you look for in leaders that will now come into the organization, build processes for the really long term, 10, 20, 30, 50 odd years? What is that like?
Got it. No, I think, Jivraj, again, I think interesting question. I think in early on, of course, hiring was extremely tough. In fact, you know, even my own sister joined Vadham after we raised some venture capital, our seed round, you can imagine. But no, I think on a serious note, I think, you know, as you can imagine, right, I'm 23-year-old, no pedigree, I had no network, not done anything in the corporate circle, very, very unconventional industry, right? I mean, you know, a lot of people used to look down on what we were trying to do, right? I mean, consumer brands anyways were not there. And, you know, to try and sell tea on the internet in global markets, I mean, it just didn't make sense, right? I mean, in 2015. So so convincing people to join, even from the tea industry, was very, very tough. Secondly, you know, while a lot of the industry is based in the northeastern part of the country, while we started there, very soon I realized that, you know, the weather in Northeast is not the best for storing tea, and it's extremely humid, which is not good for tea, right? And it needs a lot more care, and irrespective of anything, it's better to, you know, to keep it in like lesser humid conditions in North India, right? And we've been based in Delhi, right? I'm born and brought up in Delhi. So despite that, moved back to Delhi, set up the entire thing here. So that, of course, was another big challenge, that, you know, how do you convince people to move the entire country half, you know, thousands of miles away from where the base is, and then to get them to come to Delhi and, you know, sort of work. And third, of course, was the internet, right? I think, of course, it was coming up, not too much talent was available in that space. So, of course, very, very tough. And I think a lot of my early journey was, like I said, hiring driven people, who would trust me, and were hardworking. I think these were two things I used to look at. Do they believe in what I'm doing? And are they hardworking? And the rest, the idea was to train them and work with them. So I used to learn it and then sort of pass that information on to them and train them. And I believe that, you know, if you have the right intent, 10 din ki jagah 12 din lagte hain, but a hardworking person will figure it out. So that's really, you know, how the early days were, and a lot of learning, and, you know, very, very different to obviously what it is today. Of course, with scale, with more people getting to know the brand, with of course raising money. I think one of the pros of raising money is that some positive press, and that tells, and more than anything, it tells people that, you know, hey, if somebody is putting in their own money, I think that's, and somebody who's with a pedigree of, say, a Kawaljeet Singh, or, you know, the kind of angel investors I had and the funds we have had, you know, I mean, people believe that story way more, which of course opened up a lot of new avenues for us. And of course, last 2-3 years, it's been relatively easier, you know, for us to hire and get people on board, and, you know, and that's really how we have done. Of course, I think one of our advantages is that, you know, why, when you work at Vadam, and I'm just, next 1 minute is going to be a pitch for anybody trying to apply with us, is, you know, you genuinely get to learn business from a global perspective, right? Be it marketing, right? You're marketing in the US, you're doing marketing in Europe, right? From a supply chain perspective, you understand how something travels from Darjeeling to New York, from Darjeeling to London, from Assam to Tokyo, right? I think it's a lot of incredible learnings there. How do you interact? How do consumers in different markets behave? And, you know, what's how they are distinct from consumers in India, right? So I think very, very exciting and incredible learning, you know, for people who join us. And you know, because of that, of course, we had a lot of people who, you know, stayed for a long period of time. And, you know, of course, we have a very, very strong ESOP pool. And given I was a single founder, I knew that I had to ensure that, you know, I could identify people who are looking to do this for the long haul. And fortunately, you know, some of them believed in us, and here we are, right? And I think, of course, even going forward, I think a lot of this playbook will evolve, because the kind of people now we will look for and the kind of talent available now in the market is, of course, also very evolved. So just evolving to that third stage of our journey as well is also something, you know, we are sort of working on every day.
Awesome. I love that. I think goes to show that there's a lot of hustle that can, you know, cover up the initial stages, but then you bring in processes, etc., and then you get in the right set of people required for different stages, different requirements, I'm guessing. But that's lovely. I can only imagine the challenges that Vadam faces and what it would mean to work there. So, in fact, thanks for mentioning that. Another question, you mentioned this in the past as well, right? Initial fundraising was not as simplified as one may imagine, especially what it was like maybe last year. Cycles are down, all of that. I'm not a huge fan of fundraising questions per se, but since this was a unique journey, anything that kept you going in terms of raising that first, I think it was a 600K round that you first raised from angels, and you were really determined to get a couple of people as well that you converted, and you've done that, you know, consistently. Like I remember the Opera story, the Jeff Bezos award, all of that, right? Maybe talk about this determination, that early fundraise, any learnings from that aspect of just figuring it out at the early stage, right? No questions asked, you have to just do it.
Correct. No, absolutely, Jivra. I think, like I've always said and genuinely believed, basis my journey, is that the first fundraise is always the tough, especially for somebody like me, like I said, right? Unconventional industry, no real pedigree, single founder, you know, global markets, all very, very uncomfortable spaces for anybody to look at. Multiple people rejected us, almost 40 to 50 people rejected us. And ultimately, we were able to convince a bunch of angels, right, to sort of, you know, believe in our story, who had actually traveled and, you know, believed that, you know, something like this is possible. I think definitely the first one is the toughest one. But, you know, I think from a perspective that, you know, all your future fundraisers, at least you know how your business performance has been, right? And at least in the future fundraisers, no matter what you're doing, you have something to show, right? And these are hardcore numbers. Which is honestly the most, I think, ultimately the easiest way. Of course, you need to do a lot of storytelling, and, you know, you, how do you sell your vision and how do you sell your dream to investors is critical. But all of that is important, but a big chunk of that decision is based on real data and what you did with that initial capital. And like I said, right, I think going forward, relatively, it was much easier for us. All the rounds we have done after our first round, fair, relatively easier, if I could put it like that. It's never easy, the fundraise. Number one. And number two, I think, Jivraj, on your point around, some of the early folks, right? I think one of these stories is, of course, Kaval, right? Kaval, he had a background in tea and, he had invested in ID and Paperboat and somebody like him investing in us, for me, more than the money was the validation I was looking at, because, 40 people had told me stories which had made me believe that I'm wasting my time, right? And I should not do this, while we were a profitable, small, decent, profitable business even then. But it's only, Kaval sir actually got convinced, given his background in tea and, working for Lipton, one of the world's largest tea brands, it just gave us that confidence that, probably we are on the right track. So let's just put our head down and just focus on execution and cut out the noise. And that's what we did initially post that fundraise as well.
Got it. No, that's phenomenal to hear. And it's amazing how far it's come. So glad it all worked out in a way that is beneficial for everyone. But, this has been very interesting. And as we kind of conclude, I'd love to know that this expansion strategy of, targeting the US, then going to other countries. And now you're present in some, if I'm not wrong, some 70, 80 plus countries. My numbers don't lie. How do you think was the map for that, right? Like, was it very strategic or was it very experimental in nature? Any learnings from just the expansion side of the business from a geographical viewpoint?
Got it. No, absolutely, Jivrat. So just to clarify, given that number keeps coming, we have a global store. And on that global store, we have, of course, shipped to almost 135 countries. That was the last count. Because like I said, right, tea is ultimately grown in India. And no matter where you are in the world, you would want to buy Indian tea. And that really what I believe is the opportunity for Vadam over the next 10, 20 years as well, both from a tea, spices and other category perspective. But that said, our core business, of course, you can't build distribution in all these markets. So our core business is actually 6-7 markets, which is primarily the Europe, US, Canada, North America, and a little bit of India. Apart from that, we have like partners and distributors in another 15, 20 countries who we support, but they import our products and distribute it. These 6 markets where we have our own distribution, where we are trying to build our own presence, we do our own marketing, and our global store is what, sort of services all these countries across the world. Hopefully, we will add more number of countries to our focus markets. But as of now, I think we have enough to do even in these markets. So that's just one thing I wanted to sort of clarify today on this chat. Secondly, I think from a learning perspective, Jivraj, honestly, we have realized when we go deeper that even tastes and likes are different when you go to different markets. How a German would love his tea versus an American is, of course, different. But given the kind of catalog we are building, it is a model which can be replicated in every market with some tweaks. I think the bigger challenge we overcome in every market we go to is around supply chain. Ultimately, we are a food product manufactured, by us. So a lot of government bodies come into play, right, from your FDA to a lot of European bodies, and ensuring that everything we do, right, and the kind of number of SKUs we have and the kind of innovation we do, or rather try to do, how are we compliant, and how do we ensure that all our standards are world class, is really one of the bigger challenges we overcome every day, and something which is something we believe is a big priority. Because that's really the fundamental of what we are doing, right? And the team has done an incredible job. We have one of the largest facilities. It's a BRC certified, the world's toughest food safety standard in the world, certified facility here in NCR. But like I said, right, I mean, be it a halal in the UAE or some certification in Australia, or some prum product which is not allowed in Europe, right? Some ingredient which is not allowed. I think those are really, navigating through that as a global business is something which is, of course, a challenge. And number two is, of course, while you have a product, consumer tastes, preferences, behavior is different in these markets, right? So how do you market? How do you understand you know, what is pop culture for them, and, you know, what is the three things they are looking for in a brand, and, you know, ensure you're positioning it like that is, again, you know, very, 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 very critical. So, and it's of course different, right? It's the world we are talking about. So, you know, how we position our brand in India, while the fundamentally the story is similar, but there are some nuances, you know, which we need to sort of look at when we go to any market for us to really be like a solid player in these markets, right? And not just be somebody doing something, you know, on the side.
Got it. No, that's phenomenal to hear. And I think makes a lot of sense. I've also been observing this emphasis on the customer, right? You've often mentioned how it needs to be very feedback driven, very, very consumer first. And that, I think, goes to show how the brand philosophy really stands and the success of the company. As we, you know, end, I have two final questions, and these are more towards, you know, the personal persona of the founder. These are more similar to how I usually ask in end episodes as well. But one of the things I'd love to understand from each founder is how they self-reflect and maybe grow in their trajectories. So there's so much to do, I'm sure, like in terms of management, admin stuff, running the company, thinking long-term, and continuously self-learning as well. Do you have maybe a process to it? Do you have like a support system, mentors, whatnot, right? How do you, the short answer, the question is that how do you upskill yourself and continuously keep learning? What's your formula to that, Bala?
No, absolutely, Jivraj. I think very, very interesting question. And I think few things I personally do, Jivraj. One, of course, I love reading. So I try to read as many books as I can. Don't get enough time to read as much as I would want to, but try and sort of cover a lot of these books, which I find interesting, broadly follow, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs and read their books and, you know, see their journeys and see what I can learn from that. Apart from that, of course, I love hearing to podcasts, including yours. So, you know, I would have probably watched all your videos and I follow a lot of these podcasts and, you know, which is, I think, a lot of amazing content available online. I think not for me, I think even for any entrepreneur, aspiring entrepreneur at any level scale, I think a lot of learnings from sort of people's journey. And I think thirdly, you know, I think having a lot of friends doing similar things, building companies in a similar category, in similar spaces. You know, a lot of, I think the D2C community is very, very close, fortunately. You know, spending time with a lot of these friends, I think that also helps, you know, in helps you in self-learning. And also, I think, you know, a lot of you always, of course, you have a lot of rainy days, right? So I think spending time with and, you know, sharing problems, then I think the problems become much, I think the burden becomes much lesser when you share it with other friends who are doing the same thing. So yeah, that's really what I do personally. And of course, I have a very, very sound board, and I have a mentor who, you know, I take advice from a few times. So that is of course there, but so I think it could be a mix of things depending on, you know, what I'm doing.
Absolutely, I can imagine, but that's lovely to hear, super candid as it seems, and a bunch of things. But this has been awesome. I think a lot of brand building lessons. I'll probably end with a stereotypical one, but this is something that I often use on the podcast when I host, you know, consumer first founders, which is to say that a lot of brands will get built, and it's never been easier to start a brand, but it's never been more difficult to scale one. As a founder who's now at a position, and I'm sure this is only going to rise, hopefully so, as a founder who scaled a brand, what would you like to just, you know, maybe share as final learnings to people who are considering either working at a consumer first brand or new age or starting one? What would your final learnings to them be?
Got it. So I think, Jivraj, honestly, that's a very, very tough question. And I really wished I had the answer to it so that I could use it in my own business and scale the business to where we believe it can go. A lot of this is what I summarized in this chat, right? I think, you know, continuing to listen to your consumers in understanding what you need to, the more products you launch, the more categories you can do. I think that, of course, increases your TAM. Of course, that does not mean you do it sooner than you should. There's always a right time. And when you believe you've obviously exhausted what you can do in a certain categories, when you go next, or you believe that you're capable as a team to handle doing two categories, is when you go to the next one. But that is a general, you know, and a scientific way to sort of increase your TAM and, fortunately, you know, use the brand equity you've built, right? And transfer that to other categories and scale your business quicker by increasing, you know, order values and, you know, getting more wallet share from the consumer. And the second is, of course, you know, how do you then scale up all these other aspects of your business, right? While, you know, working with a marketing team of 3 people versus 20 is very different, right? Manufacturing 5 products versus manufacturing 200 products is an extremely different task. And you know, working when, you know, like I said, right, being in 10,000 stores versus 50,000 is very, very different, right? So the processes, systems, and how you sort of run that through your entire organization, the culture, I think all of that becomes so central to you, you know, you scaling the business, right? So first I would say, you know, ensuring that your TAM is big enough and, you know, if there is more you can do there, and the other is internally, how do you sort of just execute better, is really what I think needed to sort of scale for a lot of at least consumer brand entrepreneurs I speak to.
Got it. Awesome. No, I think that sums it up really well. Thank you so much, Bala, for your time. I think this has been phenomenal. I certainly have taken back a lot of learnings on brand building and consumer companies getting scaled, built, and, you know, CEO challenges as well as a founder, and just hustling your way through to figure out a bunch of things and building a scalable org. Thank you. And I really enjoyed it.
Thanks for having me, Jeevan. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. With that, we come to the end of this conversation. Thank you so much for tuning into the episode. I really hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. If you're finding value with the podcast, do follow it on the audio streaming platform of your choice, drop in a review, and subscribe to our WhatsApp newsletter to get all the updates directly on your inbox. Thanks again. I will see you next week for another episode. Till then, I hope you recall. If you never try, you'll never know. Stay tuned and keep building.